showcasing some of the best of Miami cuisine. You can experience signature dishes created by Miami chefs and discover the tropical fusion of ingredients that makes Miami dining so out of the ordinary. Details at ilovemiamispice.com. And support for NPR Newscast comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to ensure a wilderness legacy for future generations at pewtrusts.org.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Today we visit with Occidental College professor and writer Peter Dreyer. We discuss his recent book, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. He cites those who were activists to promote civil rights, justice, democracy, and also challenged the status quo. Professor Dreyer joins us from Southern California Public Radio in Pasadena. Welcome to you, Peter Dreyer. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So the 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, explain the criteria that made you choose them. I'm sure you've also had many questions about your choices.
Well, I tried to write a book that celebrated the great pioneers of America who made this a better country, particularly during the 20th century. A lot of the ideas that we today take for granted were once considered radical and even utopian. Social security, a minimum wage, giving women the right to vote, protections for workplace safety and against unsafe consumer products. Those were all considered radical ideas at one point. But today, we assume that those are things that we are rights. And so the book celebrates the thinkers, the activists, and the politicians who promoted these ideas, who fought for them before they were mainstream, and who brought us a better country. And so these are great patriots, many of whom are well-known, like Martin Luther King and Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Roosevelt, but many of whom are somewhat invisible to the broader public. And I thought it was important to celebrate them and give them a chance to readers to get a chance to understand that we stand on the shoulders of these great Americans.
But you also leave out, the titans of industry, military genius, other entertainment titans. So you leave out like Henry Ford and Eisenhower and even Elvis.
Well, you know, Henry Ford was an anti-Semite, a racist, and a union buster, and a sympathizer with Adolf Hitler. So I don't think he'd make my book. And there were lots of other people in this country who, you know, did great things in their own way. Elvis Presley was a great entertainer. Walt Disney was a great cartoonist. But they weren't active in the movements that brought America to the place where we are proud of our human rights and we're proud of our civil rights. And so I celebrated the people who challenged the status quo. It doesn't mean that there aren't other people that did great things, but they didn't do great things to make America a more equal and fair and democratic with a small D country.
I was surprised. The list of the Social Justice Hall of Fame isn't alphabetized, but I was surprised I couldn't find Lenny Bruce in there.
Well, you know, I cheated a little bit. In the introductory chapter, I added 50 people who I would have included if I had more room. I do include people who were in show business. I do include Arthur Miller, the great playwright, and I include his contemporary, Tony Kushner, Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Bruce Springsteen, Paul Robeson, the great singer, actor, and activist. And there are other people who, like John Steinbeck, the great novelist, who I would have included if I had more room. I don't think Lenny Bruce quite makes the cut. I admired his willingness to, as a comedian, as an entertainer, to challenge the free speech limitations of the 1950s and 1960s. But all the people in my book were long-distance runners. They dedicated their entire lives to the fights for social and economic justice, and I wouldn't put Lenny Bruce in that category. I do think that there are other people who in show business, who Yip Harburg, for example, the great lyricist and composer who wrote the Wizard of Oz music and who also wrote Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Someone like him I would include in the list of the next tier of great Americans. But I wouldn't put Lenny Bruce in that category.
Well, of these 100 that you chose to who furthered democracy and challenged the status quo, you also include Billie Jean King. She had one celebrated match against an old has-been tennis player. How does that work versus somebody like Lenny Bruce?
Mm-hmm. Well, I included three athletes in my list of 100 greatest Americans of the 20th century. Jackie Robinson, who broke the color line in baseball and used his fame as a baseball player to promote civil rights. Muhammad Ali, who used his fame as a great boxer, as heavyweight champion, to challenge the war in Vietnam. And Billie Jean King was a courageous athlete. She not only was probably the greatest female tennis player of all time, but she used her fame and her platform to promote equal rights for women, not just in athletics, but in general. So she acknowledged that she had an abortion in an article in Ms. Magazine before abortions were legal, and helped to pave the way for women's reproductive freedom. And every girl today who plays high school sports or soccer or college sports owes a great debt of gratitude to Billie Jean King, because she was one of the strongest advocates for Title IX, the part of the Civil Rights Act that required colleges and high schools to equalize funding for women, not just in sports, but in all aspects of education. And so lots of people stand on Billie Jean King's shoulders. She was she testified before Congress. She organized rallies. She was more than a sports figure.
Tell me, it must be... When anyone assembles a greatest list on almost any topic, of course, they're subject to nitpicking, and I'm sure you've had plenty of that. But some of our conservative friends must decry some of your choices. Earl Warren, Paul Robeson, Lyndon Johnson, Malcolm X, and Ted Kennedy.
Well, you know, Earl Warren is one of those people who... It was a great Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. His court moved America in a very positive direction. He's most famous for the 9-0 decision, Brown versus Board of Education, which ruled that segregated schools were unconstitutional. But he also was a great promoter of civil liberties and civil rights. But when he was the Attorney General of California, he was a conservative Republican who actually promoted the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, which was an incredible civil rights violation. So Earl Warren is one of those people who I say in the book, most of the people are heroes, but they're not saints. They're not perfect people. They all have flaws. Lyndon Johnson was a great hero to many people for the war on poverty, for the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act, for Medicare and Medicaid. And yet a lot of liberals and progressives strenuously object to the way he lied about the war in Vietnam and expanded American involvement in Vietnam. So the same thing with Teddy Roosevelt, who's in the book. He was an imperialist. He was a racist. But he also was a very early environmentalist. Teddy Roosevelt was the chief advocate for something called the Meat Inspection Act, which helped to make our consumer and food products a lot safer. After he read Upton Sinclair's novel, The Jungle, about the awful conditions of the meatpacking industry, he became an advocate for public health and safety. So everybody in this book has flaws. Some of them are personal and some of them are political. But I think all of them deserve to be in the book because they accomplished great things as not only as individuals, but as part of broader movements for social and economic justice.
What about some of the other great Americans who have kind of tarnished achievements? I'm thinking the historical treatment, say, of Henry Kissinger, JFK, even Colin Powell. You didn't include any.
Well, you know, Henry Kissinger, I consider him a war criminal. And the fact that he was given the Nobel Peace Prize is an outrage. On the other hand, Pete Seeger deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. And I wrote an article in Huffington Post the other day that suggested that we nominate Pete Seeger, the great folk troubadour and environmentalist and human rights activist, for the Nobel Prize. So, you know, military heroes, sometimes they go back to civilian life and they have second thoughts. You know, Dwight Eisenhower was a great general. He was probably the greatest general of the 20th century. He led the troops in World War II. But after he became president, after 8 years, he gave a great speech where he warned the country about the power of the military-industrial complex. He coined that phrase. And we're still living with the legacy of the military-industrial complex that he warned us about. I didn't put Eisenhower in the book.
That was my next question, is why isn't he in then?
Well, because for most of his political career, which was 8 years as president, he was a fairly moderate to middle of the road Republican. I mean, in today's terms, he was not an advocate of civil rights. He sort of ignored the civil rights movement until he could no longer ignore it. He was not an advocate of women's rights. He was not an advocate of workers' rights. He tried to roll back the New Deal a little bit, but
I think he sent the National Guard into Little Rock.
Reluctantly, he did so. Reluctantly, he didn't really want to do that. And after Earl Warren, he appointed Earl Warren to the Supreme Court because he thought he was appointing a conservative Republican who had been the governor of California. And once Earl Warren had a change of heart and became a liberal Supreme Court justice, Eisenhower said that appointing Warren to the Supreme Court was the biggest damn mistake he ever made. And so I don't consider Eisenhower to be a hero, a social justice hero, but the one thing he did that was remarkable and memorable was that great speech he gave warning us about the power of the military-industrial complex, the overlapping power of big business and the military and the Pentagon. And, of course, ever since the end of the Cold War, when we thought we were going to be able to scale back our military and dedicate more of our funds or our federal funds for social and economic uplifting, we've been held hostage to the military-industrial complex. And I think, you know, Colin Powell and the other people you mentioned are part of that complex.
We're speaking with Occidental College professor and writer Peter Dreyer. We're talking about his book, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. Peter, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
And thanks so much for joining us for WLRN's Topical Currents. We are funded by listeners like you and by the law offices of Elliott W. Rifkin, PA, located in the Dadeland area, focusing on family, real estate, and general civil matters, and proud to support the quality programming on WLRN.
Like Topical Currents' Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying. At facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
Do you know of a great block? We're looking to highlight the best blocks in South Florida. Send us photographs and short videos of your favorite block in Broward, Miami-Dade, or Palm Beach counties. 5 experts in urban planning will be reviewing submissions. Go to wlrn.org/bestblock for details.
If you're having a hard time selling that old car or truck or just don't want the bother of selling it, the WLRN Vehicle Donation Program can help. Just call 877-WLRN-CAR, 877-957-6227, or donate online at WLRN.org. Donating is easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that just won't sell. That's 877-WLRN-CAR or donate online at WLRN.org.
And we return. It's Joseph Cooper with today's Topical Currents. We're speaking with Peter Dreyer about his list of 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email, it's a little quicker, that's radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. Perhaps you have some names you'd like to add to the 100 Greatest list. Perhaps you'd like to dispute Professor Dreyer's list of 100 Greatest Americans. Tell me, Professor, some of these names I'd never heard of, and I'm fairly competent in American history, but one that seemed very interesting was Miles Horton, who was a white mentor of Rosa Parks. Tell us about him.
Miles Horton was the founder of something called the Highlander Center, which still exists in Tennessee. He believed that there needed to be a way to teach ordinary people, working class people, particularly in the South, how to get a voice in their political and economic system. And so we started a training center in rural Tennessee called the Highlander Center. It was based on some schools in Denmark that he had visited that helped farmers and workers to educate themselves about economic and political issues. And so we started this the Highlander Center in rural Tennessee. Beginning in the 30s, many of the people that we now know as the great heroes of the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, participated in their workshops. Pete Seeger and other singers went there to participate in their workshops. The song "We Shall Overcome" Pete Seeger learned that song at the Highlander Center from some tobacco workers in North Carolina who used it on the picket line. So Miles Horton had been a theology student and decided that the way to promote the social gospel and his views of what Jesus would have wanted was to train people about community organizing and labor organizing and social justice. So he started the Highlander Center. It's been going on now for over 75 years. Today it trains people working on immigrant rights and environmental justice and civil rights and human rights issues. He didn't want to be a public figure. He wanted to be like many of the people in my book, like Bayard Rustin and Ella Baker and others. They wanted to be behind-the-scenes organizers who let other people do the talking, and they did the organizing.
I can't remember whether it's Theodore Geisel or Geisel, but those who we all know as Dr. Seuss, his contributions to earn to be on your list.
There are a number of people in the book who are famous, but not for their political views. Albert Einstein, the scientist, Helen Keller, who is most famous for being blind, but was actually quite a prominent and committed social activist. And Dr. Seuss, whose real name is Theodore Geisel, has a very interesting career. He was an editorial cartoonist for a left-wing newspaper in New York called PM, which lasted about 10 years in the 1940s. And he drew cartoons that were quite critical of conservative and right-wing and racist people, not just Hitler, but people like Charles Lindbergh and Father Coughlin, the right-wing radio priest. And on the side, he began writing children's books. And now, of course, he is known as the most famous and prolific children's writer in the history of the world. And if you look closely at many of his children's books, he continues to advocate for social justice in the themes of the book. One of his most famous books, of course, is Yertle the Turtle. Yertle the Turtle is about a bully turtle who tries to exploit the other turtles. It's really a metaphor about Hitler and about bullies in general. Another book, of course, The Lorax, which is today a movie in the theaters, is about how business tries to abuse the environment, and he wrote that long before most people became big environmentalists. Another of his books, The Butter Battle Book, is a satire on the nuclear arms race. It's a children's book about how silly it is that people on two sides of the fence, he's obviously referring metaphorically the United States and the Soviet Union, are trying to outdo each other to build bigger and bigger weapons. And then there's some other books that that he wrote that are quite famous. The Sneetches is really a book about anti-Semitism. And even Horton Hears a Who is a book about oppression and giving people a voice. So throughout the world, and particularly the United States, parents who've been reading Dr. Seuss books to their children for 50 years may not be aware that the not too subtle message in many of his books is about bullies and injustice and people getting a voice and having a role to play in their society.
Again, our number, we have some lines open, 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576, and email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Tell me, some of the people on your list that I've met, let me tell you this story about Studs Terkel. Of course, the great talkmaster, author, radio host. Studs came here to the Miami Book Fair International a few years before he died, and I was called upon to introduce him, which was quite an honor. And we went to the little green room behind the stage and to kind of get to know each other a little bit, and he wound up interviewing me as though I had anything to really talk about. He was just such an engaging and thoughtful person. Unbelievable. Tell us more about why he's on your list.
Well, there are a group of people on my list who are writers, theologians, musicians, people that inspired us to think about a better world ahead and to get involved in movements for social justice. And that's what Studs Terkel did. He was a TV actor and then, as you said, a radio talk show host in Chicago. And on his show in Chicago, which lasted for 4 decades, he brought people and gave a voice to people like Woody Guthrie and others and activists that weren't really featured on the mainstream radio or TV broadcasts of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And so he was a real pioneer in giving voice to folk music, to social justice activists, to writers and playwrights who were challenging the status quo. And then later in life, when in his 50s, he started a kind of a second career as a book writer, and he pioneered the idea of oral history, of interviewing ordinary Americans about their lives and giving voice to people that work in factories and cops and firefighters and school teachers and
ordinary
people. Of course,
his books, Working, The Good War, which chronicled people in their own voices during the Depression and World War II.
Right. Today, you know, historians teach in universities. They teach students how to do oral histories. But it was Studs Terkel, more than anyone else, who really pioneered the idea. During the 1930s, during the Franklin Roosevelt New Deal, there was a federal agency called the Works Progress Administration, and they would send writers out to Indian reservations or Appalachia or factories, and they would interview ordinary people, including a lot of ex-slaves, about what their lives were like. And so that was really the first wave of great oral histories. And Studs Terkel picked up on that, and he would interview people at great length. He'd let people speak for a long time, and then he'd edit their interviews into these wonderful books like Working and The Great War and books on race and books on old age. And he gave ordinary people a heroic voice. He understood that America is built by ordinary people, not by military leaders or by politicians or by business leaders, but by ordinary people. And so he, on his radio show and in his books, he gave them a voice. And I think that Studs Terkel is now, a role model for many young historians. But he did this on his own. He wasn't trained to do it. He learned how to do it himself.
He was also a jazz expert.
Yes, you know, his radio show brought people like Billie Holiday and others to his show, and his original show was a music show, and then he began to invite the musicians and singers onto his show to talk about their music, and that's when he realized he had a great facility for interviewing people and making people, putting people at ease in the radio studio, just like you're doing now. And gave people an ability to talk about their hopes and their dreams and their lives.
We carried his syndicated program many years on this station, so that's why I'm so familiar with him. Peter Dreyer, you made a slight reference to Helen Keller. Most of us think of her as the subject of the miracle worker play and film, but she really was quite radical and was one of the founders of the ACLU.
Helen Keller is most famous for being blind, and what most people know about her was when she was a young girl, she lost her sight, and that her parents paid for a woman named Ann Sullivan to move in with them in their farm in Alabama and to teach Helen Keller how to speak, how to write, how to identify objects, because she was blind and deaf. And she learned how to do that. But once she gained her voice, she used it not only to help address the problems of the blind and became a great advocate for what today we would call disability rights, but she was also a socialist. She was a radical. She was a feminist, and she was a pacifist. And during World War II, she spoke out at many meetings during World War I against American entry into the war. She was a strong advocate for women's rights, wrote many articles in magazines and newspapers advocating birth control, advocating women's right to vote before they had the right to vote. She was a socialist, and she campaigned for Eugene Debs, who's also in my book, who ran as the Socialist Party candidate for president several times. They made a movie about Helen Keller while she was still alive called Deliverance, and she went to the opening of the movie, and at the time, the employees of the movie theater were on strike, and so Helen Keller decided she would stand outside the theater and walk the picket lines with the employees of the movie theater rather than go in and promote the movie about her. So she really was a principled woman, and yet, if you go on the official Helen Keller website at her hometown in Alabama, it kind of freezes her when she was 7 or 8 years old as a wild young girl learning how to cope with being blind. It mentions in passing that she graduated from Radcliffe College, but then her life disappears. And so most Americans don't know that Helen Keller was an activist and a radical, and that for most of her life, she was not only famous for being blind, but she had a great social and political vision.
We're speaking with Peter Dreyer about his book, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century. We're going to take another short break and be back with more.
It's Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, and we thank you for joining us. Tea Party candidates are making inroads in big congressional races, but who's driving them into office? The Tea Party or billionaire donors? Coming up on Point this evening at 7 on WLRN. And a look ahead to tomorrow's Topical Currents.
In 1989, a Miami-Dade law banned ownership of pit bull dogs in the county. This stemmed from many attacks, including a Kendall girl bitten in the face. Hello, it's Joseph Cooper. Join us for Thursday's Topical Currents. Next week, county voters can repeal a pit bull ban. Are the canine dangers more hype than fact? And more, Linda Gastenheimer with new Southern cooking, beyond fried chicken and collards. We'll speak with a James Beard Award-winning chef from Alabama, Thursday at 1.
We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, Palm Beach Drama Works, Litowitz Foundation, and Coral Gables Congregational Church. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs that you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support.
And 1:35 on WLRN, it's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. We resume our conversation with Occidental College professor Peter Dreyer. We're discussing his book, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, the Social Justice Hall of Fame. Peter, how about a website where people can learn more about you and the book?
100greatestamericans.org. They can learn about the book. They can learn where to buy it. They can see the list of the 100 people that I put in the book, and then they can email me and dispute whether they think I left somebody out or put somebody in that didn't belong there.
How about if I give you a gripe? Why don't you alphabetize them?
Well, I think the book is organized by in chronological order, and it's because we want to see how the country evolved over time. And so we begin with people like Jane Addams and Eugene Debs and Francis Perkins at the turn of the century, and we go up through Barbara Ehrenreich and Michael Moore and Bill Moyers and Tony Kushner at the end of the 20th century. And I think it gives people a timeline, a sense of how the country was pushed by these pioneers to be a more inclusive and democratic country. And I think if we did it chronologically, if we did it alphabetically, people wouldn't have that sense of how our history unfolded and how these radical ideas at the turn of the century, like Social Security and women's right to vote, became part of the common sense mainstream.
Well, you mentioned Barbara Ehrenreich, quite a prominent participatory journalist, wrote the great book Nickel and Dimed and has been on this program a few times. In fact, she may be listening because she does live in the Florida Keys. Tell us more about Barbara Ehrenreich.
Yeah, well, Barbara is part of a long history of journalists who saw their role as exposing injustice and waking Americans up to the unfairness in society and advocating for change. Barbara's book about Nickel and Dimed really put the idea of the working poor on the agenda, which she wrote about 12 years ago, and helped to promote things like living wage laws at the local level and raising the minimum wage and giving low-wage workers greater rights. And she's in the proud tradition of people like Upton Sinclair and his book The Jungle, Lincoln Steffens, the great muckraking journalist. Lewis Hine is in the book. He was a photographer who took incredible pictures of children living in slums and working in sweatshops and helped to educate America about the awful conditions in our cities, particularly among immigrants and children at the turn of the century. And there are other people like that throughout the 20th century who exposed injustice. William Carey McWilliams was another person who during the 1930s and 40s wrote about immigrants and farm workers and exposed the awful abusive conditions facing the people that grow our fruit who we rely on for the food we eat. And so Barbara Ehrenreich and Michael Moore, who does it through both his books and his films, holds a mirror up to society and says, is this the kind of society we want to be? And if not, what can we do about it? So I admire Barbara Ehrenreich's writing and her willingness to not only write about social injustice and expose it, but to advocate for change.
Let's take a few calls. We're speaking with Professor Peter Dreyer, talking about the 100 greatest Americans of the 20th century. First up, a Key West caller. This is Vanessa. Thanks for your patience, Vanessa. Hi.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor. And Professor Dreyer, what a fantastic idea to create, to write such a, what sounds like should be required reading in every school, a book. Barbara Ehrenreich is a Keys resident, and I do hope she calls in because that would be a real thrill. As a matter of fact, when she was writing one of her books, she was a line cook. My son was a line cook at a local restaurant where she was doing her research, and so that's an interesting little connection there.
She also worked at Walmart and was one of the in the maid services business.
Yes. And then, of course, switching quickly, Pete Seeger, I'm a guitarist and songwriter to a degree, and I've always admired Pete Seeger, and I think your suggestion of him getting the Nobel Peace Prize is completely inspired. But speaking of inspiration, are you familiar with Mary Baker Eddy? She was born in Boston in 1821, and I was just wondering, are most of your people born in the 1900s, or did you go further back?
This is a book about 20th century American heroes and pioneers, and so the people in the book, many of them were born in the 19th century, but they did most of their work, their social and political work, in the 20th century. And so there are people who I admire a great deal, like John Muir, the founder of the Sierra Club, and Ida Wells, who was a leader of the anti-lynching movement, and others who lived into the 20th century, but most of their work, like Mary Baker Eddy's work, was done in the 19th century. So if someone else wants to write a book about the greatest Americans of the 19th century, there are plenty of candidates.
I was surprised, Peter Dreyer, not to find Eugene McCarthy on your list.
Well, I picked a number of people who were politicians, Franklin Roosevelt and Paul Wellstone and Vito Marcantonio, the great congressman, Robert La Follette, fighting Bob La Follette from Wisconsin, who was the governor and then later the senator. One of the people in my book is Allard Lowenstein, who recruited Senator Gene McCarthy to run for president in the Democratic primary in 1968 against Lyndon Johnson as an anti-war candidate. And so Gene McCarthy is in the book in a kind of guest appearance, but in the chapter on Allard Lowenstein, Allard Lowenstein is one of those figures that few people today know about, but he was the one who, along with a guy named Bob Moses, had the idea for Mississippi Freedom Summer, bringing college students and other activists to Mississippi to register voters and to challenge the segregation in the South, the Jim Crow laws. And then later he became active in the anti-war movement, Allard Lowenstein, and recruited Gene McCarthy. Gene McCarthy himself was a good liberal senator from Minnesota, a little quirky and not always very consistent in his liberal beliefs. But he did play an important role in running against Lyndon Johnson in 1968 as an anti-war candidate. And he did well enough in the New Hampshire primary that Lyndon Johnson realized that he was going to have a hard time getting reelected, and he decided not to run for reelection. That's when Bobby Kennedy decided to get into the race. And, of course, if Bobby Kennedy hadn't been shot in June of 1968, he probably would have beaten Richard Nixon, and he would have been president, and the entire direction of our country would have changed. So that's a great tragedy that Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And I'm pretty sure everybody, most historians agree that Bobby Kennedy would have beat Gene McCarthy in 1968 for the Democratic nomination for president, and then would have beat Richard Nixon. And it's a tragedy because Richard Nixon brought a lot of some good things, but mostly bad things.
Let's go on with our callers. This is Everroy in Coral Springs. Hello there.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Professor Dr. Dreyer. My question is, I just want you to comment on two of the person that I heard you mention. One of them was Dr. Malcolm X and Harry Belafonte, but I have one question about a gentleman that I don't remember his name, and it's just a shame that I don't remember his name, but how I came to know about him is in a documentary and about somewhere in the Mid-South, way back in the early century. He's a Caucasian gentleman that pretty much lost all his wealth and fame and, you know, ridicule and all of that just because of the greater good of helping slaves and black people in general. And he didn't have to do it, but he do it because it was the right thing to do. And because of that, he I think he pretty much died, not a real poor person, but he died less fortunate than he would if he had not done that. I don't remember his name. I don't know if the professor would
have. Would you have any idea, Peter Dreyer?
Well, there are lots of white people who were active in the civil rights movement beginning in the early 1900s with the founding of the NAACP. And there were quite a few wealthy business people, for example, Julius Rosenwald, who was one of the owners of Sears Roebuck, who was a social philanthropist. Julius Rosenwald gave away much of his fortune for social justice causes. He was a funder of the Highlander School, which we mentioned earlier, in Miles Horton. He built a lot of schools for African-American children in the South. He supported Booker T. Washington. And so he was a great philanthropist. but he didn't die poor. He, you know, he handed on his fortune to his children, and they continued his tradition of social justice philanthropy. So I don't know exactly the person that the caller is talking about, but there were many white people, including abolitionists back in the 1900s, who took great risks to fight for the rights of African Americans, to free the slaves, to promote voting and economic rights for African Americans in the South, to dismantle the Jim Crow system. And you know, one of the more invisible people in American history that's in my book is Bayard Rustin, who very few people know about today, but who was one of the great civil rights organizers, and who organized the March on Washington in 1963. There's a name that that few Americans know about today, but there is a great documentary film made about him called Brother Outsider, which I highly recommend. Bayard Rustin is a native of Westchester, Pennsylvania, and about 10 years ago, the people of Westchester built a new high school, and the school board had to decide who to name their high school after. Westchester is an area that's about 90% white and mostly Republican, but they named their school after Bayard Rustin, who was black, gay, a pacifist, and a socialist. So it's remarkable how these people who were one time considered radicals often become our heroes today.
We're speaking with Peter Dreyer about his book, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century. You're listening to WLR on Radio, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Florida Keys. Will take a short break and be back with more.
We're funded by listeners like you and by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. IFAS enriches the lives of students, communities, and all Floridians by providing academic and everyday solutions to problems concerning food, the environment, and economic development. IFAS features the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, research and education centers, and UF Extension with programs in every Florida county. U of F IFAS is on the web at ifas.ufl.edu.
And we're back. Today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper with you. We're speaking with Professor Peter Dreyer. Peter, let's take a few more phone calls in the last segment of our program. This is Jim in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Jim.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Other than the, you know, the many obvious names that I think we'd all think of, names like Stuart Brand, John Lennon, Einstein all come to mind. But the one I'm most curious about is a personal hero of mine, Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster Fuller was an architect and an engineer and a utopian thinker in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. He's most famous for inventing something called the geodesic dome. He is not in the book. He's somebody I admire a great deal, but he was kind of a quirky inventor. He had some ideas for how to build a utopian society. There were many people whose ideas reflect or are similar to his that are in the book, who believed in challenging authority. There are people like Lewis Mumford, who I list as one of the second tier of the 50 greatest, who was an urban planner. But one of the people in the book is Jane Jacobs. Jane Jacobs was an architecture critic and an urban planning critic who, during the 1950s and 60s, when the federal government and local governments were tearing down buildings for what was called urban renewal and building highways through the slums rather than trying to improve the neighborhoods, tearing them down, she wrote a book called The Life and Death of Great American Cities, which eventually became kind of the Bible for community organizers and activists trying to stop the bulldozing of their neighborhoods. And so I think someone like Jane Jacobs played a more important role in changing the built environment and the structure of our cities than someone like Buckminster Fuller, who I admire, but who wasn't the kind of activist and engaged in social movements that someone like Jane Jacobs was.
We have a caller who wants to know whether Eleanor Roosevelt was included. I think she was, correct?
Eleanor Roosevelt is a great hero. She was much more progressive than her husband, Franklin Roosevelt, and she was one of his top advisors. And so she was, in some ways, his eyes and ears. As a young girl, she was involved in something called the National Consumers League, which still exists. She worked in settlement houses. She was involved in struggles for women's rights and union rights. She overcame her early anti-Semitism and racism to become a great activist for social justice. And so, yes, Eleanor Roosevelt was one of the great heroines of the 20th century. And, you know, she was a close advisor to her husband who pushed him to be more progressive. And so we owe a great deal of the New Deal and the social and economic legislation of the period to Eleanor's influence on her husband, Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay, let's take a final caller. This is Jim in Boca Raton. Hey, Jim.
Hi. Yes, I would like to propose an anti-progressive list of people that are my heroes and the heroes of most American people of the 20th century. And these would be political leaders like Ronald Reagan, great economists like Milton Friedman, great writers and thinkers like William F. Buckley Jr. and Ayn Rand. And it doesn't surprise me that a professor at the in academia is so out of touch with mainstream Americans who are rejecting the now newest edition, which is the, if not Marxist socialist, social progressive administration we have in Washington today. So thank you so much for listening to me.
Okay, thanks for your call. Any comment, Peter?
Well, you know, back in the early 1900s, a socialist congressman named Victor Berger proposed an idea called old age insurance. And people called him a radical and a utopian and impractical. 20 years later, the country got Social Security thanks to the New Deal and Franklin Roosevelt. And today, an overwhelming majority of Tea Party supporters believe that Social Security has been good for the country and is something that we shouldn't take away from them. And so a lot of the radical ideas are today common sense. And so the people that the caller mentioned, Ronald Reagan and William Buckley, they opposed most of the things that today we take for granted, that women's rights and civil rights that most Americans agree are good things. Ronald Reagan couldn't hold Pete Seeger's banjo in terms of social justice, and so I just disagree with the caller. Ronald Reagan is responsible for a lot of the problems of the homeless and the poor. He was anti-union. He was opposed to women's rights. And so I don't see him as someone who furthered making America a more humane and livable country, which is the point of the book and is why I put these 100 people in the book to celebrate their achievements.
We only have a minute or so left, Peter Dreyer, but how about the boss, Bruce Springsteen, who's on your list?
Oh, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan and Paul Robeson and the boss, Bruce Springsteen, are in the book for inspiring people to challenge the status quo. Bruce Springsteen gives voice to the people who were victims of Ronald Reagan's America, the people who were losing their jobs when factories went overseas, who were losing their jobs when union busting happened and they lost their income. And so Bruce Springsteen today, his latest album says we have to care for each other. During the 1970s and 80s and 90s, he was one of the few people speaking out for blue-collar workers, and I admire him a great deal. And he sees himself in the tradition of the progressive troubadours like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger. He's made several albums honoring Woody Guthrie, who wrote This Land Is Your Land, our unofficial national anthem, and Pete Seeger. So Bruce Springsteen really is in the great tradition of giving voice to the voiceless and hope to the hopeless.
Well, I certainly want to thank you. Tell me more about you quickly, the chairman of environmental policy at Occidental.
I teach political science at Occidental College, which is a wonderful private liberal arts college in Los Angeles. I chair the Urban Environmental Policy Program. Many of our students are engaged in social justice activities. We also have conservative students. We like to exchange ideas and get people thinking outside the box. I love teaching there. And the book I wrote, The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, was written in part to help educate the next generation about the great heroes of our country.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you very much for coming on our station, Peter Dreyer.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks for listening this hour. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Bonnie Berman. Paul Leary gives production assistance. Find author and book links, such as today's, on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Also, discussion and comments there as well. And free audio archives and MP3 downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow, we begin with a look at the pit bull measure on this month's voter ballot. Miami-Dade could rescind the ban on the dogs. Also, Linda Gassenheimer looks at new Southern cooking. And on to the calendar. On this day in 1937, 75 years ago, the birth of actor Dustin Hoffman in Los Angeles. He first studied acting alongside Gene Hackman and became a star as Benjamin Braddock in 1967's The Graduate. And on this day in 1952, 60 years ago, the birth of Howard Stern newscaster and sidekick Robin Quivers in Pikesville, Maryland. She began working with Stern in 1981 at Washington, D.C.'s WWDC. And one more while we head to 1060 West Addison Street in Chicago. On this day, 1988, 24 years ago, the first night ball game at Chicago's Wrigley Field. After four innings, the game is called for rain, with the Cubs leading 3-1. The curse of the goat. And we leave with this from Dustin Hoffman, whose Oscars were for Kramer versus Kramer and Rain Man. Quote, "I don't think I'm alone when I look at the homeless person or the psychotic or the drunk or the drug addict or the criminal and see their baby pictures in my mind's eye. You don't think they were cute like every other baby?" This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Political